Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
It is time for Movies and Booze. We're joined in the studio by Dee Reddy, Brian Lloyd and Dean McGuinness. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
Hello.
And so, Dean, these aren't beers you brought in. They're like minerals with a bit of beer in them. What's going on?
We have got a soft drink theme going. We've got the judging of the annual National Homebrew Club competition is happening tomorrow in Rascals Brewing Company in Inchicore. So we've got two kind of creative beers from Rascals that we're tasting today. The first one is Rascals Club Rokshandy Pale Ale, and it does exactly what it says in the tin.
Right. Okay.
And the second one is Rascals Pink Lemonade Sour.
Okay, and are they beers in the traditional sense?
They're like beers, yeah, they're beers.
What's the ABV in them like?
So in the case of the Rokshandy, brewed to in collaboration with Club, and it has orange and lemon flavours to it. When you brew pale ale, you can get fruit flavours, but they've also infused fruit flavours into this. Done a really good job on both beers.
Okay.
All right.
They do really interesting beers. Yeah, they bring out a load of kind of limited edition ones, don't they?
Yeah, that's what we'll be chatting about. Basically, the influence of home brewing. Like, I think any time you mention home brewing, there's somebody in the group who says, "Yes, I had a home brew once. I was struck blind," and
And to be judged, they have to bring their baths in with them. Where they put them all
So I think if you look at home brewing, if you were to think of brewing as comedy, then home brewing would be the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Okay.
Go along to it and everybody does.
So if you win this, you'll get a TV series.
Yeah. That's it. Okay.
At the very least, you'll get an Amazon Prime special.
At the very least. So A Working Man, is this finally Jason Statham appearing in a Ken Loach movie kind of thing?
100%, yeah. 100%. Yeah. The real like kitchen sink drama, all about the grit and the kind of the social norms and the societal class structures. No, of course it isn't. He plays a former Royal Marine Commando who's now working in a building site, which apparently happens. And he is tasked with finding the building manager's daughter who's been kidnapped by Russian human traffickers. One of whom is actually Emmett Scanlon, the Irish actor that used to be in Hollyoaks.
Okay, great. Yeah. And he's it was only like some, you know, the bricklayer was the only person the fella could find to try and find his daughter.
Because he was a Royal Marine Commando, but then he left that life behind. But then he gets dragged back into it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Gosh, that's such an original concept.
I've never heard of that before, ever.
And Novocaine?
Oh, yeah. So this is Jack Quaid, and he basically plays a guy that is impervious to pain from a congenital disease, and his girlfriend gets kidnapped, and then he decides that he's basically going to put his, you know, defect, if you like, to the test and basically go after these bank robbers.
That is an original concept.
That is an original concept.
Well, again, take out the building site bit and it's Jason Statham again, really, isn't it?
Kind of. I mean, funny enough, Jason Statham was in a film a few years ago called Crank.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. It's so good.
It is wild.
It's a wild film. It's basically about this guy who has to keep his heart rate up or he'll die.
Mm.
And Novocaine kind of shares a little bit of similarity with it in the fact that it's, you know, it's a high concept being brought to an action or an action comedy. But A Working Man is absolute muck and Novocaine is not bad.
Yes, he will expand on those themes in the not too distant future. Now, I think we can all share our resentment that we don't have a part in the new Avengers movie because everybody else does.
Everybody else does.
I counted 27 people that they've listed in... Avengers Doomsday.
Yes.
Why is Kelsey Grammer in it?
He plays Beast.
Okay, yeah, I thought maybe like they called into Cheers for a beer halfway through or something. All right,
it's a very diverse list. Like, it's a real who's who of...
No Irish people.
No, that's true. But I mean diverse in terms of like...
anti-Irish, this film.
You've got your big name blockbuster stars alongside people who are maybe more known for more indie stuff or more prestige stuff. I suppose that's kind of really broadening out the fan base. So you've got everyone from Chris Hemsworth to Vanessa Kirby, Paul Rudd, Florence Pugh, Kelsey Grammer, David Harbour, Pedro Pascal, James Marsden, my favourite... Channing Tatum, and of course himself, Robert Downey Jr. is back.
But they've all been in Marvel films before, haven't they?
Some have. Not everybody has.
Right.
So some of them are new to the franchise, to the Marvel Megaverse, I think they're called.
Cinematic Universe.
Megaverse. But they announced it in the oddest way. And what is odder to me is the amount of people that actually watched this. So they basically had a 5-hour long stream that was, up until the last kind of couple of minutes, there was no one in it. It was just chairs being put out every so often, and each of the chairs, they were like the kind of chairs you'd see on a movie set, and they would have the name of a different person on them. So it was just this ever expanding kind of line of chairs, and then Robert Downey Jr. did a bit at the end. But yeah, 275 million people watched that stream live.
Jesus.
God help them.
It's going to be people from the Avengers, Black Panther, Thor, Ant-Man, The Fantastic Four, which hasn't come out yet, and Thunderbolts, that hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
Crikey.
Look, listen.
What's Thunderbolts? Are they like crap Avengers?
No, yeah, basically. Well, you say crap Avengers. Yeah, they're basically the rejects.
That is
the whole joke. And in fact, it's funny you mentioned the sort of the indie prestige thing. There was a recent trailer for Thunderbolts, and in order to book the trend, they basically put in the fact that, you know, Sebastian Stan was in The Apprentice, Florence Pugh was in Lady Macbeth. We had the cinematographer. It's all like A24 films, and like we have the cinematographer from Everything Everywhere All at Once. We have the production designer from Hereditary. We have, you know, like, as in basically pointing out the fact that like all these like, you know, very critically acclaimed filmmakers and actors and all the rest of it. Yeah, they're all basically just taking the money, basically. They're all just, you know, they've all got a mortgage to pay. They've all got bills to pay.
Absolutely.
And they're going to go do Thunderbolts.
And why not?
Get that bag, 100%.
Absolutely.
No problem. We've all got bills to pay. But it's funny that Marvel have become sort of aware of the fact that everyone rolls their eyes at Marvels now. And it's like, well, don't worry, though. These guys have done all these great films that we know you love. So how about maybe giving this a shot?
And who are they saying that to? Your average Marvel fan isn't going to go, oh, Shakespeare in Love. Wow.
But this is it. I think with the Deadpool Wolverine film last year, you saw that you could be a lot more self-referential in a funny way about it, like in terms of how they did the cameos and kind of, you know, almost overtly kind of made fun of other films.
Yeah,
within,
how crap it's
yeah,
been. Yeah,
yeah. And, you know, it seems like they might actually be course correcting kind of a little bit on what had become a bit of a nonsense.
Not everybody liked Deadpool, though. In fact,
some people found
Deadpool really grated with them because it was trying so hard to be.
Yeah,
you know,
and it comes off as smug.
Irreverent.
Yeah.
But the Deadpool character was always smug.
It was, it's true. Yeah. That was the whole thing, that he was always breaking the fourth wall and all the rest.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, they're clearly, they've clearly smashed and hit the emergency button if they're bringing in Robert Downey Jr. again, and they're bringing in the Russo brothers. So they are trying to get it back. I don't know. I mean, look, Dr. Doom, which is the character that Robert Downey Jr. is playing, is, I know this word is used so heavily, but he really is an iconic character, Dr. Doom. MF Doom.
Oh, so he's not back as
No, he's not back as Iron Man. No, he's back as Dr. Doom.
Oh, right, okay.
But again, it's the multiverse, so it's like he's basically playing an evil version of Tony Stark, where, oh God, I'll be here all day trying to explain it. But basically, yeah, he's not playing Tony Stark. He's playing Dr. Doom.
Okay. So. In the comics, was Dr. Doom really Tony Stark?
No. Okay. Oh God, right. So there was this thing called, Battle World, which was essentially like when the multiverse basically coalesced into this one planet. And on that planet, Dr. Doom had the face of Tony Stark. And he basically was running this very sort of Darwinian social structure where only the strong could survive. So everyone had to fight everyone constantly. And that was how they basically proved that they deserved to live on Battleworld. And that's sort of what they're going with here.
And if you're going to go to Battleworld, what do you think it's going to be like?
You know? You're dying a bit inside with every extra bit of detail that you're adding that you have retained in your brain.
And the thing of it is that, and this is the problem with these comic book films, is that
It's the same thing that, you know, they had to do with the Universal Monsters back in the 30s. They used to call them monster rallies, where it was like, you know, Wolfman and Frankenstein meet Laurel and Hardy. Like, they just keep throwing people in because they're just kind of trying to keep people going. And I mean, it can work in a comic book setting because, for one, you know, you have all these, the people that read it know everything about it and they're able to follow it all, and they've got in the seasons and they've got the compendiums and they know all about it. And yes, Marvel Cinematic Universe has been going for so long, chances are everyone has seen, or at least most people would be familiar with, Iron Man or the Fantastic Four or Deadpool or Black Panther or whatever. But, you know, like, it's it becomes this thing of, like, you've got 3 hours to just cram in as many characters as possible and make them all fit together. And, you know, it worked one time. I mean, it worked for Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame because that had never been done before. This kind of crisscrossing of characters and this big, massive cinematic universe coalescing into one point, that had never been done before. Now they're trying to do it again. And when they try to do it again, you're basically just going to be covering over the same path. You're going to be going over the same thing.
And the jokes aren't as funny anymore.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct. And it's, you're getting Robert Downey Jr. in again. And it's like, okay, fine. Yes, he's playing Dr. Doom, but who cares?
Yeah, desperation. Hopefully, this sounds the death knell for that particular universe. Let's have a drink, Dean. Oh,
yeah. it's going to have to lose money. It is going to have to bomb so hard that they'll just stop. So here's hoping.
Well, in their though, failure in their terms might be we don't make a billion or whatever it is.
Yeah, but like Deadpool and Wolverine, which, as you correctly said, a lot of people didn't like, it still made 1.3 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marvel, blah, blah, Doctor Doom, please make it stop, says the texter, indeed.
You and me both, bro.
Wonderbolts are very fast-flying Pegasus ponies in the My Little Pony universe. Rainbow Dash was accepted into the Wonderbolts after she achieved the Sonic Rain Boom.
Well, maybe they're going after the brony market.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the next movie. We'll be talking about reviewing that next week. Dean, please, save us.
God. Yeah. So we're tasting Club Rock Shandy Pale Ale. Now, it literally does what it says in the tin. And we're tasting both these beers because we have the National Homebrew Club competition judging happening tomorrow. So the founders of Rascals Brewing Company, Carlo Donoghue and Emma Devlin, are both people who have come from homebrewing. They spent some time in New Zealand, got into the craft brew scene there, started homebrewing in New Zealand and then came back and were continuing to homebrew. About 11, 12 years ago, they won a gold medal at the National Homebrew Club competition with a ginger porter and went on, opened up a brewery, Rascals, in Inchicore, and have... They initially had a 10-hectolitre brewery, which is a brewery that brews 1,000 litres of beer at a time. They've expanded up to a 35-hectolitre brewery, 3,500 hectolitres, and they are continuing...
And is that like a week they would produce that, or a day?
One batch of beer. So typically for a batch of beer, it takes about 8-9 hours to brew a batch
of
beer.
Okay, all right.
Now, if you're doing two batches of beer on the same day, you can kind of overlap them a little bit, so you get them out in about 12-14 hours. So 1,000 litres would be, if it's 50-litre kegs, that would be about 20 kegs of beer in the scheme of things. So it's kind of classic craft brewery, and they've expanded.
Would they be exporting much of
that? Anybody who is in exporting at the moment in the alcohol industry, especially if they've been exporting to the States, because Donald Trump is going psycho nutjob on everything. And possibly more of a concern for Irish whiskey producers. Because there's only so much whiskey that a country like Ireland can drink, and if you're selling whiskey to America, you've got 70, 80 times as many people to sell Irish whiskey to. So if you take that out of the equation, it's fairly significant.
That is a big worry. A huge worry. Yes. This is okay. I get why it's rock shandy now.
It's orange and lemon flavour, which is the classic rock shandy flavour. You've got a pale ale behind it. With the pale ale, you get a certain amount of fermentation fruit flavours. So you've got a little bit of melon and pineapple in the background as well. The bitterness in it is restrained, but then it tends to combine with the orange and lemon. So the orange and lemon flavors kind of turn into a little bit of orange rind or lemon rind, which is kind of a zingier and slightly bitter.
It's really refreshing, actually.
It is beautifully refreshing. Yeah, both the beers today. And again, brought in because they're creative beers, and that's what homebrewing brings to brewing. You've got, like, when I said that homebrewing is like the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, every homebrewer that you talk to will admit that they have had a bad batch of beer that they've brewed. Unfortunately, all of them don't throw away the bad batch of beer that they've brewed, and they give it to people to taste, and then people kind of remember the bad batch that they've had. But with the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, it's a similar type of thing. There's a lot of bad acts at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, but it's people being creative, being edgy, doing things that are different. But that's where the really creative stuff comes out of. And if you're looking for really interesting things, and in film terms, you're not looking for the world to turn into a Marvel universe where you're going to the 429th
yes.
Marvel superhero film. You need that creativity, and that's what homebrewing does. So it's great to see these guys. They've come from homebrewing, got into craft brewing. I started having a look through a list of the pilot beers that they've done, and I started doing a list of them and got through about 30 and then changed my notes to and 70 others.
Okay, fair enough.
They've
yes,
done
and
a
70
huge
others.
Amount of
yeah.
creative beer.
That's, James in Cabra says, Anytime Sean mentions Kelsey Grammer's name, I worry that he will subject us to his bizarre refusal to pronounce the name of the series Fraser correctly.
Fraser.
It's Fraser, not Fraser, says James. James is a more finely attuned ear than me.
Fraser.
Fraser.
Yeah. Well, I don't
know. Well, it's the 30 Rock joke where it's Fraser.
Fraser. Yeah, I'm not sure. We're not sure what you're saying, James.
Is he trying to make the 30 Rock joke?
I don't know. I don't know. I have a vague idea. He's.
I'd say he's only raging now that we've ruined
the joke.
Sitting
in camera now.
Sorry.
Sitting in camera. Really worried about. What movie would you like to do first?
Oh, God. Working Man, I guess.
Okay, A Working Man. So I don't know if this is true or not. Somebody else texts in to say all his films are kind of called things like The Electrician and, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. Beekeeper was the last one that he did.
Yeah. So he's running through all the trades.
Yeah, like it's good. He'll get to radio presenter at some point.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, no, but you don't need any qualifications for that.
Yeah.
Right, okay. The Working Man coming up after this.
A Working Man. Yeah.
Jenny's missing.
What do you mean missing?
She went out with her friends on Friday. Saturday, we were worried, so we called the cops, and then on Sunday, she had a piano recital on Sunday night.
We invited half our family. My cousin Dinora is a police captain in Philly, and she says they don't work these cases. They take a report and forget about it. Can you help us?
I can keep this line running smoothly.
No, help us find Jen.
My dad was a Green Beret. I can see you guys coming a mile away. You hunt bad guys. Jump out of planes. You get those bad guys.
I'm a different person now.
There you go. That's,
oh,
that's
wow.
A parents heartbroken because they had to cancel a party because their daughter was kidnapped.
It was a piano recital.
Oh, no.
I'm
that's
surprised at the time of year for the release. They don't normally bring the kind of Oscar bankable films out later in the year. Yeah.
You know? So, you know, the streaming has just upended the normal kind of release calendar.
Okay,
so, like, you can have films in March and April and they can kind of make their way into the Oscar. Like, look at Sing Sing from last year, for example. Yeah, right. So, this is directed by David Ayer. Who previously did the 2016 version of Suicide Squad with Jared Leto. Remember that?
Yeah.
I went to the toilet in my hands and then clapped, I would have come up with a better film. That's how bad Suicide Squad was. This
okay.
is not as bad. But
that's not something we're ever going to put to the test, by
no,
the way.
Please don't. Please don't. I mean, I've got two hands. But yeah, so this, I mean, okay, so one of the screenwriters in this is Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And...
Okay.
You know, the thing about Sylvester Stallone is that, like, as a director, he actually isn't bad. And I know you're kind of looking at me.
He's
actually a pretty decent director. Like, I mean, he knows what he's making. He knows how to write that kind of stuff. And he knows how to kind of sell it. 40 years ago. Nowadays, though, I mean, the fact of it is that the action genre, if you like, has just been kind of so kind of done to death that you can't really kind of come at it anymore without either A, interrogating it in some way, shape or form, or B, you're going back to basics. You're going back to a sort of a throwback like what this is trying to do. all that doesn't really matter anyway, because the thing that you're looking for is, you know, the kicking and the fighting and the punching and the pow, pow, pow and the explosions and the car chases and all the rest of it. And if you've even got that going for it, that's still something. Like, that still can be enjoyable. This doesn't have that at all. This is just crap from start to finish. And not only is it crap, but it's sloppy. Like, this is the thing that boiled me so bad about this film, was that there was one point in it you could actually see the big, huge bank of lights.
What?
Yeah, you could actually see, like, the big, like, the ones that the big filler lights, yeah, the big key lights that they use, you could literally see it in the background being angled towards Jason Statham's head. And, like, and it was all kind of out of focus, but, like, you knew exactly what you were seeing. Like, it was a big square light being aimed slowly towards Jason Statham.
Did
in
they
the middle
get a good shine off?
Oh, yeah, they got a great shine. They got all the lens flare in it as well. Like. And you just watched it. I was like, I can see you literally, I can see you making this film as you're making it. Like, how bad is this? It looks like it's been edited with a chainsaw. Emmett Scanlon, like, I mean, look, I know he's Irish and I know we don't normally like to poo-poo our own talent, but, I mean, smell the fart acting is what's going on here. Like, you know, that kind of way. It's real, just like...
There's an alarming amount of toilet references in this review.
I mean, because I can't say the word that I really want to say, but it's really bad from start to finish. Jason Fleming is in this as well, and he's playing this Russian gangster. He's acting in a completely different film. I mean, he did not get the script. He probably only got the sides. He's acting in a comedy. I mean, and there are these henchmen in it as well that are running around in these, like, gaudy tracksuits. And it's like, okay, I get it. You're making fun of Russians. And, like, yeah, no, Russians are persona non grata at the minute. So, like, we can really kind of put the studs in and all the rest of it. But, I mean... You know, it's just, I mean, what are we doing here? You know, that sort of way. Like, it's just very... And, like, Jason Statham, I mean, as an actor, I think, you know, he's done really enjoyable films. Like, he was in, like I said, Crank. I loved it. Crank High Voltage, the sequel, also great. You know, go back to Snatch. Funny in that. Look at Wrath of Man, which was this kind of recent action film he did with... Holt McElhaney from Mindhunter was in it, and that was a really enjoyable, really gritty, dark film. Even the kind of stuff like The Mechanic, which was a remake of the Charles Bronson film. You know, like, he is aware of himself. He is aware of his own limitations. Like, he said it in an interview once, I think it was either GQ or Men's Health or one of them, where he was like, I'm never going to win an Oscar. I know I'm never going to win an Oscar, so I'm just going to keep doing the films that I want to do, that I enjoy. But this, I mean, I was watching this and I was like, okay, what's the unique selling point for Jason Statham to do this? Why would he do this? Mm. This kind of film has been done before, done better. And it's been done by him as well. So, like, what is it? Like, is it just a chance of, like, oh, it's a Sylvester Stallone script? Maybe there's something in here that I can get, can find something in? No, it's not it. Avoid it at all. It'll be on Prime Video in about 2 weeks' time. Watch it then if you really have to watch it, but my God, it's terrible.
Yeah, because you mentioned Charles Bronson, and that's like, we're going back decades now, but like, all your action movies have essentially the same story arc. Yeah. There's an inciting incident where a bad guy does something which gives the hero the excuse to kill as many people as possible.
Yeah, they call it fridging.
How can you get that wrong?
I mean, it's like a cheeseburger, you know, that kind of way. Like, it's the basic components are there. You just put it in the fry and then you just, you know, get it going and all the rest of it. And hopefully some of it will be at least tasty in some kind of way. The problem with this is that it's just completely undercooked. It is just completely half-baked and it's done with such lack of care and it's done with such, you know... It's just, you can tell everyone was phoning them in. You could tell no one cared. And you could tell this was probably rammed through either before the strike or after the strike. And everyone was just like, I've just got to get through this to get to the next job because I've just got to get this through. It's terrible.
And no redeeming features whatsoever.
Not a bit. Nothing. There is nothing I can redeem in this film. It is terrible from start to finish. Please do not waste your money on this. If you really feel you have to watch it, if it's really kind of, if you've really got a yen for Jason Statham and you need to see a new film that he made, wait until this is on Prime Video and watch it then.
Well, how come he still can't do an American accent?
I don't know, actually. That's interesting.
He doesn't need to, really.
I don't think he needs to.
I know he doesn't need to, but you think at this point, like, he's enough. he's there long
enough.
But
see, this is it.
Like, I mean, sick, though.
Yeah, and I was going to say as well, like, he's Jason Statham. Mm. You know what you're getting.
Yeah, he's got a Jason Statham accent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, when people cast Jeff Goldblum for a film, they know what they're getting. You're getting Jeff Goldblum. In this, you cast Jason Statham, you're going to get Jason Statham. He's going to slap people around. He's going to see, he's going to talk like this, all of it. And he's going to be really fast. Perfect. And that can work. That can work. In with a competent director and a decent script and good actors around him. Not in this, though.
Yeah. Someone says Jason Statham's next movie is called The Reviewer, where he has to sit through a two-hour Jason Statham movie.
And you know what? I'd watch
it. Very meta.
I would watch it. And I would say that would be... I would watch that. And I, like, I'm not knocking Jason Statham at all.
No, not at all. No.
I just... This is crap. This is a terrible film. Go watch Wrath of Man. Go watch Crank. Go watch any of the Transporter films. They're all great. The more recent Fast and Furious ones that he was in. I'm not knocking.
So whose fault is this? Is it the director?
David Ayer. David Ayer.
Yeah.
Okay. Hack.
Absolute hack. Okay. Now, obviously, as we all know, there's all sorts of issues about freedom of speech in the United States, especially on universities.
Yes,
but it is kind of refreshing to hear that somebody is going to deliver the University of Maryland's 2025 commencement speech.
Yeah, and I think,
to boldly speak out their opinions.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if there's anyone that can speak to, you know, race relations, it is someone who knows that it's not easy being green.
Yeah.
Because, of course, Kermit the Frog has been announced that he is going to deliver the University of Maryland's 2025 commencement speech. Now, if I was in the graduating class of 2025, I couldn't be more pleased. Like, that's such a cool thing. So Jim Henson actually went to that university and they're very, very proud of the fact that he went there. But yeah, having little Kermie come in and do it, what a treat for everyone.
We don't know what he's going to say or what kind of speech he's going to make.
Yeah, but I mean, he's the persona of Kermit has always been kind, warm, surprisingly witty, a lot of fun. And yeah, I don't see why this would be a bad thing in any way, shape or form.
Like, do you think he'll whip out the banjo? Do you think he'd do Rainbow Connection? Oh, God,
oh, man,
I'd cry.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I'd cry.
Oh, stop. That would be incredible.
You're poo-pooing this. How dare you?
I was just kind of smirking at, you know, as
Kermit
you,
the Frog, all right.
Sorry, if we're going to be, like, we were just talking about multiverses, right? The Muppets multiverse is the only one I care about. There's like a long-running kind of thing on social media of trying to get Disney to finally make Pride and Prejudice with the Muppets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Miss Piggy as Mrs. Bennet would be perfect. People love the Muppets.
Oh,
and
no,
with
I'm
good
not
reason.
Saying people don't love the Muppets.
Well, listen.
Muppet Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
Yes.
Muppet Great Gatsby.
Oh, my goodness.
Make it. I'm serious. No, like, that's the whole thing. Because, like, Muppet Treasure Island, right? This is my favourite fact about the Muppet movies, right?
Mm. Michael Caine played it like Shakespeare.
Correct. And then when...
And that's the most accurate rendering of the book.
Correct.
Yes, yes.
Correct.
Is.
And then when Tim Curry was doing Muppet Treasure
that's
Island...
Right.
He pretended that he was a Muppet.
Yeah. And if you go back and watch the original TV series, which I've done multiple times, the way it's so funny what you can tell about a celebrity about how they interact with the Muppets. Like Liza Minnelli's episode now is just phenomenal, and Elton John's, because they are talking to the Muppets as if they are living, breathing creatures. They are so caught up in it, and it just makes it so magic.
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan's one. Did you ever see
yes,
his one?
It's great.
Where he like literally like did Pierce Brosnan, for anyone who didn't know, used to be a fire eater. He used to work in the circus, and he actually does like the trick that he'd done for years. He literally like swallows a flaming sword and then blows out the thing. Like, it's amazing. I love the Muppets.
Yeah,
right. It's fantastic.
And Jim Henson's Funeral. If you ever want to watch something that's going to make you, you know, be able to be sad about the beauty in life as opposed to the crap stuff around you.
Big Bird singing, it's not.
Oh my God.
Big Bird singing, it's not easy being green. Look that up on YouTube. You can hear Carl Spinney, his voice breaking as he's singing it. Like,
we've gone niche though, I feel like, with the funeral maybe.
I mean, but it's still beautiful though.
Yeah. We just got some breaking news. Jason Statham has announced he's going to be making a movie with the Muppets.
Yes!
Again, I'd watch that.
He's going to be looking at the bloke behind the couch through most of his scenes. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break back in a couple of minutes. Dean, tell us about our second beer.
Okay, so our second beer, Pink Lemonade Sour from Rascals Brewing Company. So it's a sour beer and it is infused with lemon crush and hibiscus. So it
That's really nice.
Yeah, there's a... tart, refreshing character to it. Hibiscus delivers a kind of a rose petals flavour, and that rose petals can convert into Turkish delight. There's a red berry character to it. Again, crisp, refreshing, lovely flavours to it. Fun, light-hearted, you know, but both really creative beers. And if you're interested in beers like this, this day week, next Friday, the 4th of April, they're doing a beer launch night at Rascals with a Meet the Brewer event. So they're launching Passion Fruit New England IPA. They're re-brewing their Strawberry Milkshake IPA, and there is a new mystery beer. So
a Strawberry Milkshake
IPA. Strawberry Milkshake IPA, yeah. Milkshake.
Sounds wrong, Dean. Well, sounds wrong.
Absolutely lovely. There's a style called Milk Stout, and they use lactose sugars to give a kind of creamy character. So what they've done is they've taken lactose sugars to do what are called milkshake IPAs, and they've got a kind of a creamy character with fruit to it. It's really, really nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
On reserve judgment. No, I won't. Right, so tell us about the BAFTAs, Dee.
Yeah, so...
How did we do?
Yeah, it's actually funny. Looking at the list of nominations, it occurred to me what a great year it has been for TV coming out of Britain. There's some huge... shows that have done really, really well internationally. So the one, unsurprisingly, that's received the most nominations is Baby Reindeer, which was a total phenomenon earlier this year. You also had Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. You had Disney Plus's incredibly camp and wonderful Rivals. You had...
Pure filth.
That's the wonderful part. Yeah, it's great. Exactly. You had Say Nothing as well, which was the another
that was, really
that was
good.
Disney. Yeah. So that was excellent. That was set in Northern Ireland during the Troubles, and yeah. So there's and there's a good few Irish people nominated as well. So Lola Pettigrew, so she was nominated obviously for Say Nothing. Graham Norton, Nicola Coughlan was nominated as well for her role in Channel 4's depression comedy Big Mood, which was also great. So yeah, it's kind of refreshing to look at an awards list like that and go, huh, yeah, I mean, very little filler.
No, absolutely. And you'd agree. What did do you know what Rivals got nominations for?
Best
bonking.
You laugh. Yeah. I'm telling you, Rivals was great crack. I loved it. Danny Dyer is having this renaissance at the moment.
No, he absolutely is. Yeah.
And he deserves it.
And you know, so David Tennant got nominated for Best Actor for his turn as the regional TV kingpin. I hope to God now that Danny Dyer...
I'm sure he must have got a look in.
Yeah,
it's an absolute disgrace.
Have you seen Last One Laughing? Where he turns up in Last One Laughing, the new kind of comedy series, and he's like, he does this whole bit where he's playing Dumbledore, but like Dumbledore as played by Ray Winston in Scum. It is the most funniest thing I have seen in months. It is so good. Look it up. Danny Dyer playing Dumbledore in Last One Laughing. It is fantastic.
Right, we'll move on to our second movie. It's called Novocaine. Here's a clip.
So, what's your deal?
My deal? I'm just a regular guy with a regular job, but I've got this condition where I don't feel pain.
Oh my God, you're a superhero.
No.
Can you feel this?
Definitely feeling something. Last night was amazing.
Hey man, you okay?
Why don't you just call the police?
They think I'm in on this.
Manslaughter, grand theft auto.
Do you know what it's like to wait your whole life to meet someone? Someone who finally gives your life meaning? Would you wait around for someone else to save her? Or would you do it yourself?
Right, that's Novocaine. Apparently the condition your man has now, some randomer has texted in to say, which of course makes it 100% true, there is a real condition your man has in that movie. In real life, it significantly shortens your life.
They talk about that in, they talk about in the film, because the whole thing of it is that he could like bite his tongue off if he was chewing on something, for example, because he just wouldn't realise that he's bit through and stuff like that. And his the whole kind of the opening kind of salvo of the film, if you like, is him basically describing his condition, describing the fact that, you know, he was not meant to live past 25, and the reason why he's managed to, you know, arrive in his 30s is because he's very, very particular about things. Like, you know, all of the sharp edges on his desk are covered with like tennis balls and stuff like that, and he lives alone, and he like blends all his food and all the rest of it. And, you know, that's really kind of what the film, it sets it up that, like, yes, it is a real thing.
Yeah.
But, of course, when he meets Amber mid-thunder and he falls in love with her, then he, like, he starts to kind of see possibility, you know, that sort of way. She gets him to taste pie for the first time and he's just blown away by it. And then he, you know, ends up having physical relations with her. And that's the first time that that's going to happen for him in a while and stuff, because, again, he can't let his heartbeat go over a certain point and, you know.
It's like the anti-crank.
Totally. That's it. Yeah, he basically has left himself, he has protected himself so much that he doesn't feel anything now, do you know what I mean? But then when the bank robbery happens and he takes off after, and then he's like, okay, well, like, I actually can't feel anything, so I'm going to get these bank robbers. And, you know, the majority of the film is him basically getting kicked around the place and being able to get back up again, because, like, when he gets punched in the face, it doesn't hurt. When one of the bad guys jams his hand into a deep fat fryer, he doesn't feel it, and he's able to pick up a gun out of it and shoot the guy and all the rest of it. I mean, one entire scene of this film is him being tortured. And they're like literally pulling his nails, and he's all like, oh no, you're hurting me, please stop. Oh, this is so bad. Because he's waiting for his mate to come in from behind and stuff. The problem, I mean, I enjoyed this film. It's very well made. I think Jack Quaid is on his way to becoming like a really kind of known quantity. Like, I mean, you would think it, given the fact that his mother is Meg Ryan, his father is Dennis Quaid, he's been in The Boys. That's been very critically acclaimed. A lot of people have enjoyed it. The problem I had with this film is that the concept runs out before the end of the film.
Mm.
And that, you know, it's 2 hours long. Make this film 90 minutes. Just take 30 minutes and just cut it out. This would be a great film. As it stands, it's a good film. You can only do the sort of thing of, you can only do the slapstick action thing so many times before it just becomes kind of like, okay, yeah I know you're not getting hurt here. Again, kind of like a comic book movie.
Culminated in him watching Jim Henson's funeral and having all the feelings.
And then it's inside and outside as well. Yeah. It's enjoyable. It's very well done. Jack Quaid, I think, can carry this kind of film. He does have great chemistry with Amber Mid-Thunder. Ray Nicholson, keeping on the Nepo Baby theme. Jack Nicholson's son is in there as well. He plays this kind of deranged bad guy. He's good in it as well. It's enjoyable. It's good crack. I mean, again, it's, you know, 30 minutes too long. Cut that out of it and it's a much better film.
This is in cinemas, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, you know... Better than a working man, I suppose. Yeah. That's the one thing we can say. And there's going to be a new movie about Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Yeah, this is really interesting and really exciting to me. So Lizzo is actually set to play Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who was one of the absolute pioneers of rock and roll back in the day. Like, she would have influenced the likes of Elvis, Little Richard, Johnny Cash, Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, and heaps of other musicians. She was an incredibly good guitarist, and she kind of was one of the first crossover acts from gospel into popular music, Billboard charts and rock and roll itself. But alongside that, she actually had an incredibly interesting life. She was a black woman from Arkansas at a time when neither of those things was particularly easy. She was gay, and she had...
Why was being from Arkansas difficult?
Well, I suppose the combination of being black and from Arkansas meant. Sorry, I could have phrased that better. But she had a heterosexual marriage to her manager, Russell Morrison, in front of 25,000 paying fans, which was actually it's considered to be be one of rock and roll's first stadium shows, and that was her wedding. They had a lifelong marriage, even though in their private life she was openly gay, and I suppose that probably helped her in terms of putting the public face on it, which wouldn't have been easy at all at the time. But okay. Yeah, so Lizzo, it's her first role. It's really exciting.
Okay, well, we should look forward to that. Thanks to Dee, Brian and Dean. That's our lot for today.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.